Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Walter Cronkite, anchor for two decades of the CBS Evening News, died Friday. He was 92. Nearly half of Americans alive today weren't watching, weren't born, were less than 9 years old when Cronkite signed off the nightly news in 1981. And yet there is something about this man, his way with the news of his time, that draws us back to compare. Here's Walter Cronkite confirming the death of President Kennedy, assassinated in 1963.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
And here in 1969, reporting astronaut Neil Armstrong's first steps on the moon.
Armstrong is on the moon. Neil Armstrong, 38-year-old American, standing on the surface of the moon.
He was born in the dawn of radio. He dies as the internet and cable fragmentation and a changing culture threaten television news. This hour, On Point, Walter Cronkite and the news, then and now. You can join the conversation. Did you tune in night after night when Walter Cronkite reigned at CBS? What was it about his delivery, his approach, the times that made him the most trusted man in America? How do you see television news today? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Somehow fitting, like Halley's Comet coming back as Mark Twain died, that Walter Cronkite has gone on the 40th anniversary of the first moon mission. He couldn't conceal his enthusiasm when Apollo 11, the lunar module, finally touched down 40 years ago today. Here he is anchoring that landing along with astronaut Wally Schirra on July 20th, 1969.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Roger, Tranquility. We copy you on the ground. You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue. We're breathing again. Thanks a lot.
Oh, boy.
Thank you.
Boy.
Okay, we're going to be busy for a minute.
Oh, boy. Man on the Moon and Walter Cronkite with the sentiments of a nation. He was there for the tough stuff as well. Here, October 27, 1972, the CBS Evening News aired a 14-minute segment on Watergate, the first in a two-part series, Walter Cronkite's goal to explain the scandal in detail.
But the episode grew steadily more sinister, no longer a caper, but the Watergate affair, escalating finally into charges of a high-level campaign of political sabotage and espionage, apparently unparalleled in American history.
Walter Cronkite, 1972. You can join us this hour. What are your memories of Walter Cronkite? How do you look back on the television news then? Television news today. 800-423-8255 is our number. We begin today with Lee Thornton. She's joining us from College Park, Maryland, began working for CBS under Walter Cronkite in the newsroom in New York, then moved to the Washington Bureau, covered the White House there. She's now professor of broadcast journalism at the University of Maryland, Merrill School of Journalism. Lee Thornton, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
What was it like to work day in and day out in the newsroom of Walter Cronkite?
It wasn't just the newsroom of Walter Cronkite. Eric Severide was also there, and everywhere you looked, the cream of the crop of broadcast journalism at that time. Roger Mudd has a book called The Place to Be, and it's about the Washington Bureau in those days. And it was all about CBS News. It was still the house of Murrow in those days. So what was it like? I mean, you were intimidated every day and very, very happy to be where you were, and lucky to be where you were.
There was a lot of talent around Cronkite, and it was the golden age of television in many ways, and yet there was something about his professionalism, personality, delivery. What was it that made Cronkite ultimately, you know, the polls found, the most trusted man in America?
It was what he projected. It was, first of all, that he knew his business. He had come up as a wire reporter. He knew journalism. This was before the blow-dry days. There is a term, ethos. He projected an ethos that you could believe him when he spoke to you. It was, sit still with this voice of mine. I'm going to tell you something important. It is true. It is good information. Listen to me. All of that came through with Walter Cronkite, indeed, as it had with the man who hired him, Edward R. Murrow. I was listening to an NPR piece this morning, and I stopped. The writing was so Murrow. It was a female reporter whose name I won't use. But the delivery went right past you. And I thought, wow, if that delivery were there, this piece could have been written by Edward R. Murrow. It was all of those things with Cronkite.
And Cronkite, like Murrow, through times of extraordinary promise but also extraordinary difficulty, listen with us, if you would, Lee, to this report, April 4th, 1968, Walter Cronkite reporting the assassination of Martin Luther King, Jr.
Good evening. Dr. Martin Luther King, the apostle of nonviolence in the civil rights movement, has been shot to death in Memphis, Tennessee. Police have issued an all-points bulletin for a well-dressed young white man seen running from the scene. Officers also reportedly chased and fired on a radio-equipped car containing two white men. Dr. King was standing on the balcony of a second-floor hotel room tonight when, according to a companion, a shot was fired from across the street. In the friend's words, the bullet exploded in his face.
Walter Cronkite on the assassination of Martin Luther King, April 4th, 1968. There's news as big as it gets, Lee, and you can hear the old teletype sound in the background and some of that very old-style delivery. Well-dressed young man seen almost a 1930s, 1940s sound, but this was completely contemporary and completely catastrophic news.
Yes, it was, and you cannot look at what is happening today and project backward. In other words, that was excellent delivery. I think it still is. And we could take the message from a Cronkite. For that matter, we could also take it from Huntley and Brinkley. It was of its time, and it was of an excellence. We have lost, in everybody's estimation, a lot of that. You can call it old style. But keep this in mind. Walter Cronkite, all by himself, had the audience, perhaps bigger in some ratings periods, than all three of the networks have today.
Sean McManus, the president of CBS News, was quoted over the weekend in the New York Times saying, we're all still looking, that is TV executives, for the next Cronkite. But he said, but I don't think anybody will be in that position of prominence again. Why not, Lee?
Because it's the same reason there will never be another Murrow. The Times, here you can look at the Times. News has been politicized. Back then, nobody talked about mainstream media. Back in the day, it was pretty much all mainstream media. The news was not seen as having a political agenda. Television and radio news weren't seen as representing the Democratic Party or liberal politics. Red states, blue states, that rise, nobody should underestimate the effect of talk radio in stirring up a resentment and a politicization of television news. And then we don't need to even bring up the Internet. The World Wide Web has changed everything for all time. So I don't think, and nobody thinks, that a Murrow, a Cronkite, could come through the system as it exists today and have the same authority. 2 weeks ago, I spoke to a group in Baltimore, and I said, imagine the most trusted man in America being a newsman. And they kind of giggled at that, because many of them were quite young, and no, they couldn't imagine that, not where the news stands today.
Lee Thornton, joining us today from the Merrill School of Journalism at the University of Maryland. She worked for CBS and with Walter Cronkite for many years. Lee, thanks so much for being with us today.
Do you have time for me to tell you one quick story?
Absolutely.
Here's the person he was. I went once to a mansion in the Kalorama area of Washington, D.C., where CBS was having a party, and there were all kinds of people there. Walter literally answered the door. It wasn't his house. Took me by the elbow and said, let me buy you a drink. And he walked me into where the drinks were.
He was joking because it was a party, but that struck you because of his sort
because
of Rushmore status and his kindness at a party? Who wouldn't do that?
I was young. I arrived alone, and he put me at my ease. He made me comfortable. And I think he did that with everyone.
Lee Thornton, thanks so much for joining us today.
Sure.
On Point News analyst Jack Beatty joins us now. Jack, we're going to hear from a lot of folks today, but I just wanted to get your sense of this man and what it is. I mean, he signed off in 1981. Here it's 2009, and the world is still really paying attention to the fact that Walter Cronkite is gone. Why?
Well, I think Lee got at some of it. There's such a deficit of trust, certainly in government and its promises, but also in the media, the influence of politics on the media now, no question about that. And I think he was a cynosure of trust. Now, when we kind of unpack that, we say, well, what was it we trusted? Well, his delivery, his voice, mm-hmm. the way he read the news. But you know, he didn't really participate in the news. He was sort of a screen showing it. But people trusted that, and you know, I think the point that it was something in his career and a great risk when in Vietnam in 1968 in the Tet Offensive, he gave that famous broadcast where he said, the government is not telling us the truth. The best we can do here is a negotiated peace. He was there breaking the screen of trust. He was breaking that, you know, objectivity and stepping out of it and being a citizen before a journalist.
But it was powerful because it was so rare in his case.
Exactly, and so rare and so important. And my gosh, if only we had had someone in that of that central stature, that Rushmore stature, as you say, before the Iraq War, to say, no, this makes no sense.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Walter Cronkite and television news then and now. Our own Jack Beatty joins us. Here he is. First, the trip that Jack described to Vietnam, the Vietnam War going on. This was in the immediate aftermath of the 1968 devastating Tet Offensive. Cronkite in the field first to take a closer look at the toll of the war.
All that is known with certainty is that on the first two nights of the Tet Lunar New Year's, the Viet Cong and North Vietnamese regular forces, violating the truce agreed on for that holiday, struck across the entire length of South Vietnam, hitting the largest 35 cities, towns, and provincial capitals. How many died and how much damage was done, however, are still but approximations, despite the official figures.
And then, on his return from that reporting trip, Cronkite brought a lot of official accounts into question. On February 27th, he closed his special report of that year. He closed a special report on the conflict with a judgment that the Vietnam War was in stalemate. Afterward, President Lyndon Johnson is reported to have said, "If I've lost Cronkite, I've lost Middle America."
To say that we are closer to victory today is to believe, in the face of the evidence, the optimists who have been wrong in the past. To say that we are mired in stalemate seems the only realistic, if unsatisfactory, conclusion. On the off chance the military and political analysts are right, in the next few months we must test the enemy's intentions in case this is indeed his last big gasp before negotiations. But it is increasingly clear to this reporter that the only rational way out then will be to negotiate, not as victors, but as an honorable people who lived up to their pledge to defend democracy and did the best they could. This is Walter Cronkite. Good night.
Walter Cronkite, good night. Bill Moyers reports that LBJ turned away from that television report and said, "If I've lost Cronkite, I've lost Middle America." We're going to have some good insight from others who have watched television news and Cronkite for a long time. A couple of listeners first. Lake City, South Carolina. Caesar, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Jack. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I am 35 years old, and so when Walter Cronkite went off the air in 81, I was fairly young.
Yes.
But growing up, my parents were both working parents, so we were raised by me and my brother were raised by an older couple while my parents worked. But when the older gentleman that raised me came in, he was a farmer. When he came in from the fields, it was dinner time, and it was time to watch Walter Cronkite. And that meant no talking. We had to listen. And afterwards, we talk about the news and what we saw. And I remember the images of the Iran hostage affair with the 444 days. I remember when we first had the space shuttle take off. I remember getting that with Walter Cronkite. And as I watch the news now, you know, sometimes you watch the news and you yearn for somebody that you can trust like Walter, but there's really nobody. Everybody's like a substitute teacher almost. They're not like the real thing. It's the same thing disparaging about the broadcast journalists we have now, because we have some fine ones, but they just don't have it. You're either Walter Cronkite or you're just something else. And I really, you know, it feels like, you know, I can feel myself getting older because the great people are just leaving. Walter Cronkite's died. And, you know, it's like, well, wow, who else is going to be the great person to just give you the information in a pure sense without any, which you can feel like the undercurrent of some ulterior motive. Mm. And to me, Walter Cronkite was just the epitome of trust. Even when I was a child, say 5, 6, 7, and 8 years old.
We hear it, Caesar, and you bring it all back, and I thank you very much for your call. I'm sure many people feel the same way, though, you know, we look for greats among us even now. I want to welcome into this conversation from Baltimore, Maryland, David Zurawick. He's television and media critic for the Baltimore Sun. David, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom, for having me.
And from Ossining, New York, Peter Boyer's with us, staff writer for The New Yorker, author of Who Killed CBS? The Undoing of America's Number One News Network. Peter Boyer, thank you for being here.
Good to be with you. Hey, folks.
Hey, David Zurawick, first to you. You know, there's an individual who has passed here, Walter Cronkite at 92, and it is striking that after all these years, it still turns heads so deeply and makes people, you know, we've got in the New York Times today, Verlin Klinkenberg saying an age passes with the passing of Walter Cronkite. Wow, that's as big as it gets. Why?
Well, one age that passes with Cronkite is sort of the touchstone of the golden age of television news, of network television news. That's one age. But I think the thing you've been talking about with the other guests and with this really perceptive caller you just
had,
is this notion of, you know, when you asked the first question of Lee Thornton and said, why, I wrote down, we want someone to trust on my notepad, and I've now heard that 4 or 5 different ways. Mm-hmm. We do, but there's a couple of cuts to that, Tom, and one of them was, you know, when you had the space bite on here where he said, oh boy, you know, we live in this age of, it's not just, as Lee said, the politicization of news, but it's also a larger cultural mindset of cynicism and irony. And once you accept that position, you sort of step outside of American history. You sort of stand on the sidelines and watch it. Cronkite never did that. He was in the deep and strong currents of American history, and he saw the role of journalism as key to American democracy. We need, our job is to provide fact-based, reliable, verified information to the public. If we do that, we serve the republic. That's so far gone from television news in many senses today. You see some of it at CNN. The networks still sort of have it, but the dominant mode of discourse is the MSNBC, Fox, you know, news channels fighting with each other. That age is gone. Also, of course, technology, all the other forces have fractured the audience in this sort of notion of a collective sense of American identity that we got. You know, when Caesar talked about coming in and watching, you know, you thought of the people out in the plains, in the farm states of the Midwest, people on the East Coast, people in California, all watching that same newscast. And it wasn't a kind of brainwashing. There were 3 newscasts. There were other ways to get information. But you shared the sort of movement, the great arc of American history, and that is really gone. And that's what Cronkite, I think, represented to us. We were part of that. We were up to our whatever in the flow of American history. And now we sort of stand outside of it. And, oh, we turn on MSNBC and they tell us this president's bad because he's a conservative. We turn on Fox, they tell us the president we have now is bad because he's a liberal. That's a crazy discourse that's going on in this country. And TV news is at the center of it. And it was a better time when Cronkite's fact-based journalism ruled the airwaves.
Peter Boyer, how do you interpret the degree of public trust trust that was there for Walter Cronkite? How much was the man? How much was the state of the news business in those days, or American culture then? How do you weigh it, Peter?
Well, I pretty much agree with the foregoing. And I think there's a reason for it. Well, Cronkite, first of all, was, and that whole undertaking, the broadcast, CBS News, were particular to a moment that was really an anomaly. I mean, when you think about it, an anomaly, I would suggest, to journalism, and particularly to broadcast journalism. You had these three outfits, ABC to a much lesser degree, but NBC and CBS, that had a captive audience, a ton of money.
Captive because there were not a million other cable channels and websites to go to.
That's exactly right. A ton of dough, thanks to a federal license, and a mandate, or really almost an indulgence, to have this one little corner of their enterprise that did something that they, you know, all agreed was important, and in fact that the FCC insisted that they, to some degree or another, do this public and the public interest, convenience, and necessity. And so you had this sort of rarefied little culture within the broadcast networks that said the unlikely, despite the fact that they made no money, and that we're going to stand apart, we're going to be the one enterprise that isn't a commercial. And we will, in the case of CBS News, we will cover the world like the New York Times does. And we will even be so bold as to call our nightly newscast the broadcast of record. I mean, none of that made sense economically, as we came to see once there was actual competition. And it led to some things that were perhaps not so good journalistically, but...
Like?
Well... And, you know, I think to some degree actually began when Walter did what he, when he took it upon himself to declare that the Vietnam War was effectively lost, that that a stalemate should be declared, and that was the beginning. Believe me, I think probably LBJ was right when he said we've lost Middle America when we've lost Walter, but. In a way, that is all we see now, as David suggests. I mean, that is literally all we see now. Once you do that, you begin to lose that conceit of objectivity. That's not what happened. That's not the thing that undid broadcast news by any means. But it was more the competition. But that is the natural inclination. That's where the force of gravity ultimately takes you.
Let me ask you about that, Peter. If I may, Cronkite took his own step there, right there. Maybe it was an important one for the country. But you say competition has just sucked the rest of the news way off in that direction. What about competition makes that inevitable? Why can't we have competition and straightforward, straight-ahead, Cronkite-style news delivery?
Here's why. When I heard that Walter was ill, maybe a week or two ago, and that he was dying, the first thing I thought of, and for reasons you'll presently understand, was Michael Jackson. And I thought of that night in 1977, I guess it was, when Elvis Presley died. And the CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite that evening did not even include the death of Elvis Presley in the opening segment. Now, of course, contrast that. I won't recount it for you, because I'm sure it's pretty.
We all saw it.
Pretty memorable. Contrast that. Now, why is that? The answer is, instead of having half a dozen middle-aged, older white guys who grew up in the newspaper tradition sitting around and deciding what the news is going to be because it's important and what the public should know, news organizations are today, for reasons of commercial imperative, in the business of giving people pretty much what they want to know, what they would like to see. What they wanted to see was, I mean, I was stunned. Even I, who was pretty cynical about this, that business, was stunned to see all three network news anchors go out to California to anchor coverage of Michael Jackson's funeral. I mean, it was a pretty stunning statement of the driving force behind the broadcast news business these days. And the reason is Fox News discovered that by giving an audience what it pretty much likes, wants to hear, we can create a commercial enterprise where one hadn't existed. And, of course, the others all have done pretty much the same thing.
And off we go. Let's get a call from Dennis in DeWitt, Iowa. Dennis, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I agree with everything you're saying. I'm 57 years old. I remember distinctly watching Walt Cronkite every evening with my family. And we have lost the objectivity in news. Three things that trouble me so much and make me so cynical. I assume that Walter probably was cynical about it, too. Number one, we have Hollywood journalists now, people like Katie Couric, who mingle with the Hollywood crowd quite a bit and get to pay $20 million to sit in front of a monitor. Number two, it seems like you have to be a Playboy bunny to be an anchor. I even wonder if they've gone to college or not. Probably doesn't matter. And number three, it seems like I lament the fact it seems that the new media has failed us. They tend to spend 3 weeks on a blonde diva that died, and we all know probably drugs, and then three more weeks on whose baby was it, and Michael Jackson's a repeat of that, yet maybe 20 seconds on something that's really important like Iran or something like that. I lament it all the time. I think a lot of my age, I assume Walter is probably cynical about it too. Thank you.
Dennis, thanks very much for calling. No thanks to Anna Nicole Smith. Yes, please, to more news. But Jack, Peter Boyer describes a situation where you get more competition, and this is what wins. I mean, do you have to take the remote control out of the hands of Americans or go back to a kind of more paternalistic system, which surely Walter Cronkite at some level represented, to have serious news dominate?
Well, I think that's a complicated question. I mean, this if serious news is defined as objectivity, well, what is objectivity? Often, in those days, it seems to me, it was the government today said this, and tomorrow it said that. Sources claim it was very much part almost of the government. That's why I thought it was so remarkable and courageous what Cronkite did in Vietnam. He stepped away from that establishment and stood outside it and said, no, I know I'm from the greatest generation. I know I covered the war. I know I should be, you know, willing to salute the flag under all circumstances, but not now, not today. This is wrong. He broke away from that, and I think that that objectivity, understood as simply reporting the facts, is a kind of cheat on the complexity of the facts. And I would contrast that to the tradition of I.F. Stone, who was a neighbor of mine in Washington, and Izzy just simply basically went on the assumption that the government is probably lying about nearly almost everything, or spinning, as we would say. And he saw that Washington world of objectivity and sources and let's be right down the middle. He saw that as just an adjunct of the government, a way of legitimizing power without seeming to. And he challenged it fundamentally by reading documents and by, you know, almost Talmudic attention to detail that showed the fabric of lie, the small lie, and then the larger lie, and did that with Vietnam and with issue after issue. And I set that tradition against Walter. And I think that tradition of I.F. Stone lives on today in blogs. I think in some ways we're better off.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Walter Cronkite and television news. The New Yorker's Peter Boyer, author of Who Killed CBS, joins us this hour. And David Zurawick is here from Baltimore, television and media critic for the Baltimore Sun. Jack Beatty's here as well. Let's listen way back, talk about power and the press and the presidency. Here's Walter Cronkite interviewing President Kennedy in Hyannisport, Cape Cod, Massachusetts, on Labor Day weekend, 1963.
The only hot war we've got running at the moment is, of course, the one in Vietnam, and we've got our difficulties there, quite obviously.
I don't think that unless a greater effort is made by the government to win popular support, that the war can be won out there. In the final analysis, it's their war. They're the ones who have to win it or lose it. We can help them. We can give them equipment. We can send our men out there as advisors, but they have to win it, the people of Vietnam, against the communists.
And funny, tragically enough, what JFK is saying there in 1963 is something like what Walter Cronkite said that so stunned LBJ 5 years later. Let's hear from our listeners. Michelle, St. Albans, Vermont. You're on the air, Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, what do you think?
Well, I wanted to first tell you that my impression of listening to Walter Cronkite on the news was as if you had invited a neighbor into your living room, and he was then relaying the news that was of concern to you. It was presented in such a way as to not be, you know, not from the point of view of a master's or a PhD or a political spin doctor. It was just observing the news. And I think that was a wonderful gift he had, and part of his charisma was to come off as an equal.
Yeah, kind of straightforward from the shoulder, citizen to citizen. And yet he had that delivery, which was not exactly sitting in the living room. White man seen fleeing the scene.
Yes, yes, yes. But still, you know, still the common man touch, mm-hmm. you know, the mm-hmm. way of speaking to every person.
So who does that for you now, Michelle, if anyone?
No one, actually. I don't feel as if I'm being spoken to as an equal. I feel like I'm being spoken down to and told what to think. But, and here's the big but, and I don't remember who said it, whether it was Thomas Jefferson or James Madison, that the press was of vital importance to our democracy, that it was the fourth estate or the sixth estate, mm-hmm. that the press had an obligation to present to us news so that we could, as a democracy, make decisions and vote and see what was going on within our country. And I think the growing pains of the press, being the news, the internet, the media, is that now we have a plethora of choices of different people's opinions and things. But I think that it will swing around, and I think it's important.
Michelle, thanks very much for calling. Let me get one more right here from Bloomfield, Michigan. Sam, you're on the air. How do you see it?
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
I just want to say that Cronkite was great, no doubt, but the era was a different era. The reason you can't get Cronkite nowadays is because you're not allowed to have one. Remember the anchor, what, Dan something? What was his name?
Dan Rather?
Yeah. He was forced to resign because he reported on George W. Bush's military service. So the era is different. And just remember when Michael Jackson died, that around the same time the American troops were withdrawing from the Iraqi cities. And it's just amazing. Like, it was like, just, you know, the news passed by, just mentioned this. Such a big event for the American and the Iraqi people.
Sam, we've got it, and I appreciate your call as well. David Zurawick, you're hearing from Peter Boyer, from our listeners, people missing that, but the notion that we can't have it now for some reason. Is that baked in the cake of the technology that dominates now and the fragmentation? Can we really, or might we be better off, as Jack Beatty says, with more sources? I have Stone style rather than the grandeur of Cronkite.
Good God, no, time to what Jack Beatty said. Jack did something there, and I'm really glad I got a chance to try to clarify it. He collapsed the philosophical notion of objectivity with a way of presenting information to the public, fact-based journalism. The two are not the same. You can emphasize verified factual information. There's a whole construct here of the notion of a free press. Its job is to provide information to citizens so that they can use it to make better decisions about their life. That has nothing to do with objectivity, and to dismiss it as some kind of government white male authority structure, blah, 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 is absolutely false.
But there is a difference, David, between passing on a press release and doing investigative journalism.
Yeah, Walter Cronkite and CBS News didn't pass on press releases. Far from it. They verified the information. That's when you don't pass on press releases. And it's outrageous to dismiss it. You know, the assumption Jack had, the government is always lying, is also an awful assumption to operate with as a journalist, that the government is always lying. And to say that is somehow better than the journalism that CBS News at its heyday and Walter Cronkite presented, I really want to clarify it, because from that point on, this discussion, in a way, with the listeners, got confused again with politics. And by the way, Peter Boyer, who knows the history of network news and CBS News, I think, better or as well as anyone, is right. When Cronkite talked about the Vietnam War that way, first of all, Sandy Sokolow, his executive producer, told me, and it's in my obit, that he did not do it in the evening news because they didn't want to muddy the waters of the evening news with opinion.
It was in his special report.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. And it was a big deal to Sokolow to get that straight. That's how much they valued it. But from that point on, it did become political. And just look at Spiro Agnew and Richard Nixon, and by 67, 68, how the discourse that says you can't trust mainstream media, it's part of the liberal blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah, started. Peter nailed it. That's where it started.
Peter Boyer, what about this issue of proximity to power of the big organs of the press in those days versus, you know, a more skeptical view of power? And does that factor in when you look at whether or not the Internet may play the role in a new way that some would laud, maybe not Jack, but some would laud Cronkite for playing in his day?
Well, I think there are two or three issues at play. I think one of them, listen, it is a very tricky thing to say what is the objective truth, of course. But it is not only an appropriate, I would say, a necessary mission for journalists to endeavor to go after what can be taken as a consensus objective truth. I mean, that's important. That's essential to a democracy. It is also useful in a different way, I think, to have these contesting voices, which, of course, through technology, we have no shortage of. Mm. We will never again, I think, have a journalism that is the product of a relatively small elite group of people who hire other folks who get themselves close to power and interpret for us what they think is the truth. In some ways, as elitist as it sounds, that was actually pretty good for a country that operated much more on a consensus basis 35, 40 years ago than it does now. But whether it was good or not is irrelevant because it's forever gone.
Jack, we've got, speaking of the web here from our website, Sarah writes, I think the trust that the public put in people like Cronkite and other newsmen allowed the public not to think critically about the world. We're in a better place now, she writes, that there are more voices chiming in and people have to decide for themselves what is true. Agree, Jack?
Well, I'm partial to that. I think that the blogging tradition, which is an older tradition in American journalism, really has added something, and I think it showed up the faults of standard, you know, quote, objective journalism. After all, you know, we just come through a period when our two leading newspapers had to write apologies for their coverage of the lead in to the Iraq War. I mean, that's really, really a statement about some people could look at that and they could say, well, you know, a certain kind of journalism has just confessed its impotence here. They passed on what the government was saying. They weren't critical enough. People were in the same bubble of assumptions. They were all whatever it was. They had sources who were tainted, just as the government did. And I think that was a blow to the standard model of journalism represented by Walter Cronkite in every moment except the Vietnam situation when he broke out of it. I think that that brought it to a kind of crisis point from which that kind of journalism is going to be a long time recovering, I think.
Let's get some testimony from our listeners. Dando from Interlake in New York. Dando, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hello.
I am one of the people who are singing Walter Cronkite's praise here. Walter Cronkite was a type of journalist that knew how to pierce through the big lie propaganda of government. The government of my parents, I'm originally from South Africa.
Uh-huh.
The leaders of South Africa at the time were people who were schooled right at the time when Hitler was going through Germany. They went to university in Nazi Germany. And lo and behold, around 48, they launched their apartheid with all the theory behind it. And, of course, they sought to polish the image of the brand of fascism they were launching.
Where does Cronkite come in, Dando?
He comes in now when later on the people of South Africa had, in response to this operation, had now sought to get international solidarity at places like the United Nations. Walter Cronkite was one of the few journalists who came to South Africa to interview the people themselves on how apartheid was impacting them. CBS then made a documentary called Sabotage in South Africa. And that spelled what South Africa, when people protested and spoke against the laws, South Africa called that sabotage. And people were given harsh sentences for even merely saying, hey, we don't like the kind of education you're giving our children. That meant long sentences in jail. Yeah.
And Cronkite was there to pierce that veil, you say. And it's important to remember that. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. You know, Walter Cronkite appeared a couple of times on this show, and I wanted to play just a little bit of that. It was interesting. I spoke with him on November 3rd, 2004. This was after President Bush was reelected. And I asked him then, Walter Cronkite, about how he felt about the country's direction. Here he is.
I am nonpartisan. I do not belong to a party. I'm not party-oriented, but I am liberal. And I must say that I am concerned about much of the administration's program. But I am hopeful that they are open to compromises today that will put us back on a program that most of our people can support, whether they're liberal or conservative, whether they are Christians or some other religion, whether they live in the southern states or in the northern states or the Grand Prairie areas. We've got to put all of this aside now.
Walter Cronkite there in 2004. David Zurawiec, there he is retired as a journalist, essentially. He's in his mid-80s, free to say whatever he likes. But you hear Cronkite calling for more that era of consensus that Peter Boyer talked about. More national unity, please.
Yeah, well, I think that's very – well, and again, you heard that in that oh boy of the space shot. That's very much who he was. It was a different era. It was a different American sensibility, and I think he remained that absolutely to the end. By the way, I do want to really say one thing. With the Times and the Post that Jack referred to in the war
– the mea culpas.
In Iraq, if they had practiced – Walter Cronkite journalism and verified the information they had before they printed it, they wouldn't have printed it and may have been a different situation in terms of us getting in the war. It isn't that journalism that allowed them to print it. It's that they didn't practice the kind of journalism CBS News did at its heyday, especially the New York Times.
Peter Boyer, you wrote Who Killed CBS. After Cronkite's retirement, did they deliberately turn away from his style of news, his style of anchor work, or were they driven from it by the competition you described earlier?
Both. And David is exactly right in what he just said, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I'd just like to add that.
Second that.
Completely. Mm-hmm. Both. I mean, they did it. They did it deliberately, they would say in retrospect, because they were driven to it by competition. There wasn't anything like what we see now, but you know, they tried to CBS News in particular, which was the franchise that mattered because it was the standard, literally tried to remake the world. They literally divided the world into what the president of CBS News at the time, Van Sauter, called yesterday, which was the Walter Cronkite era, and, you know, today. And that was the Dan Rather era. Dan Rather was famously made nervous just by the presence of Walter Cronkite or any of his people. And it was part of it was just the sort of weird nature of television. You know, it's show business in a way, even CBS News. And part of it also was a conscious, deliberate effort to make news more of a commodity that sold. There were dangers in that, if you want to call them dangers, if you want to put a value judgment on what ultimately came of it. I think what ultimately came of it was nonstop 24-hour Michael Jackson funeral coverage where you send your anchors. But in a way, you know, I mean, that was, I think, just inevitable. I think dressing up the news post-Cronkite, let's put it this way. Had Cronkite had been 20 years younger, it still would have happened, in my view. And, I mean, Cronkite, because of his personality, might have walked away from it. But his leaving when he did, retiring when he did, happened to coincide, I think, with a moment when the business was bound to change and was going to change.
I'm Peter Boyer, David Zurawiec, Jack Beatty. Thanks to each of you for joining us. Here's Cronkite on the moon.
Armstrong is on the moon, Neil Armstrong, 38-year-old American, standing on the surface of the moon. On this July 20th, 1969.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.